Hey, you're listening to Don't Make Sense. I'm Dr. Vivian Rodriguez, an educational psychologist, blogger, educator, and coach who loves to talk about style, life, creating, and mental health. Okay, so I started this podcast to create a space to talk about style and substance, to talk about the complexities of being a woman who's authentic and thriving. All right, let's get into it. All right, today we have a really fun guest. We have Talicia from Foodie with the Fro, and she's a content creator, and she helps folks with the three Fs, food, fashion, and fitness. Hey, Talicia, thanks for being on the show.
Hey, thank you for having me. I'm excited about the conversation today.
Yeah. All right. So I was looking through your feed on Instagram, and first of all, everything's gorgeous, but we'll talk about that later. But you mentioned that food feeds us in two ways, providing physical stamina and to nourish the soul. So let's talk about, how did you become a foodie? So like, kind of share your journey with us.
Man, I feel like I've been a foodie my whole life. My family is very into food. So we have joined all types of contests and fairs and things like that when I was growing up. So I would bake with my mother and my great aunts and things like that. We used to pickle things. So I feel like I've been in the kitchen my whole entire life, and it made me feel so connected. And I felt like it was definitely it's almost like it breaks down barriers. So if you're speaking with somebody and also eating a plate of food with them too, or you're sharing food with them, I feel like it helps to have like a social lubricant. Instead of just having alcohol or another vice, now you're able to eat. And I feel like it's just such a way to kind of make everything on the same level. Mm. And that, I think, is very, very liberating, important, especially now. I mean, obviously I do create content, but I think that sometimes it's important to be able to have those moments where you're able to just kind of stop, sit down and have a conversation with people. And I feel like that's a lot of what food does. And so I think I became a foodie because I like to talk. And it's a really cool way to have a conversation with people. Mm-hmm. It's a great way to have a conversation with people. You can talk about memories that are connected to food, moments that are connected to food, and it will just completely transform or transport somebody into that place. And so I was born in Houston, Texas, but when I moved to New York, I feel like I was opened up to a whole new world of food. My very limited amount of food was very Caribbean based or very Southern. And
yeah, it's definitely, I think, like a bridge. You know,
yes. And, I mean, yeah. I think that so much of what food is helps people to connect. Everyone has to eat. Mm-hmm. Otherwise you wouldn't be in existence. And so if you're having an interaction with somebody, being able to talk to them about their favorite whatever is absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you went to culinary school. Do you feel like that kind of helped you deepen your love for food? Talk a little bit about that, because I think that's a unique experience. Not everybody gets to do that.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. So in home ec class, I was like, I'm going to go to the Art Institute of America. I really want to do this. But my family's focus for me was going into medicine. Yeah, my aunt's dying wish was for me to become a doctor. She's like, you need another doctor in the family. And I think from a very Caribbean and or Southern background, that's kind of expected. Mm-hmm. To either become an engineer, an accountant, a doctor, something in that realm. And so when I did do the deviation to go to culinary school for a while, I think it was a shock to my parents. I think it was a shock to pretty much everyone. But I don't think that I will ever trade that. I learned so many things about food that I don't think the average person gets to. Mm-hmm. Things about food temperature, which I think is kind of sometimes taken for granted. Like, oh, you know, once I think it's done because it has a specific color. But food temperature, I think, is uber important. I don't know how many times I may have had undercooked food and just wasn't aware of it before I ended up going there, or food that was sitting out maybe for too long where bacteria started to grow and I wasn't aware of that. But I do think that I gained that information going to culinary school. And then also flavor development is so key. And I don't think that most home cooks are able to really develop that without maybe getting taught through a class or something like that. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's some amazing home cooks, but I think the technical side of it, being able to layer flavors within a dish and making it balanced, is something that I picked up in culinary school and didn't really, I honestly didn't think about it before I went. I was just like, well, it tastes good. And I'm not really sure how they got it that way. It just seems like they were seasoning properly and that worked out. But there's a level of layering that you do within your cooking process that really makes food stand out like that. And it's not necessarily salt and pepper, but it's the way that you put in the salt and pepper. So if you're going to put in the onions, you can salt and pepper that first. And then as you put in other ingredients, you're doing them each individually. So they all kind of develop its own flavor with it. And then depending on what you deglaze the pan with, that's another level. And all of that's kind of like the core things, but then obviously that goes into techniques of how you're cooking the food and all of that. I think that going there really made me a lover of food because I understood that side of it. And so I look for that whenever I go into restaurants, for sure. Culinary school for a while. And when I went there, I definitely started to open up my palate. But then when you come to New York, you're actually able to taste all of the food that you would probably around the world, but from the people who are indigenous to that place. So if I'm going to eat Bolivian food, I'm eating it from somebody normally, if you're in New York, from somebody who's from Bolivia. And I feel like that's absolutely amazing. And then they kind of are able to tell you the story about, you know, hey, this is why I made it this way, because my grandmother made it this way. And so, you know, this may not be the way that you'd get it at maybe a restaurant or something like that, but that's the way that we make it here. And I love those types of stories. I just love tasting different things and being able to just really experience the world through food. I will say that it's almost even better when you're experiencing a food from a specific place and you're actually there, like eating Egyptian food in Egypt or eating South African food in South Africa. Those are, I absolutely love it. And so to be able to, from birth to now, kind of evolve how I experience and interact with food has been great.
Right. It's like you learned the behind the scenes of making food, the details that go into it. So I bet when you go to a restaurant, you like have a better appreciation for something that's like really well done. Like they did a good job. Like just the attention to the process.
Yeah. And also, you know, I have to say that I highly respect any chef that cooks in a kitchen. It's really a thankless job. And I don't think most people think about it, but, you know, during holidays or, holidays for sure, there's somebody in the back cooking for you. Mm-hmm. And that also means that they're not with their family on that day. I know there was a really heightened level of awareness whenever people were saying, hey, Black Friday is awful. We're pulling people from their families. It's the most horrible thing ever. We're making people like leave at 5 a.m. to get there so people that can buy a television that costs like $250. And it may or may not break the next day, but still, you're getting your deal. Mm-hmm. But chefs have been doing that forever. If there's a Christmas or a Thanksgiving and you're eating out at a restaurant, that's somebody who's decided that their passion for cooking and feeding people is enough to maybe forego spending that time with their family.
Right.
And or friends and loved ones. Yeah.
Yeah. So now one of the things I also read in your feed, you were talking about that you're really passionate about increasing representation in the media. You know, and you, I think one of your captions mentioned that seeing like a commercial where they put like random rap, you know, on the commercial to sell a burger.
Yes. Oh my goodness. I you know, I'm not going to call it the brand. I think I did on the feed, but yeah, like if you sit here and try to like send me a McDouble or something like that, and you're just like putting it over a rap beat, that does not make it connect to your African-American audience. Mm-hmm. I think that especially now, thank God now, we've seen that Black people aren't a monolith, and that's true and very apparent. We come in all shapes, sizes, and colors, but we also come in different cultural backgrounds. Some people don't necessarily even speak English as their first language, or maybe they don't even connect to the African-American experience as a in a way that media decides to sell to us. Right. I have a lot of friends who are in the Latinx community, and you know, their upbringing was maybe more similar to the way that I was in the Caribbean way, but it was just different. And so while they do, I mean, I think for them, maybe Enrique Iglesias would probably be more of a connector than some random guy rapping over about how much they like their patty. Or maybe it's not even that. Maybe I just don't like the way that you guys composed this rap song. It's trash. So it's just, you know, I don't think when I saw that, I felt like it was a very, whoever signed off on that was tone deaf, in my personal opinion. Mm-hmm. There was probably no Black people in the room, because I don't think that somebody was thinking like, hey, you know, how do we connect to our African-American audience? They like rap music, let's go. I mean, even if you just look at the numbers now, the majority of folks who buy rap are not Black people. So it's just like, you know, maybe we're varied. I mean, but that also means please don't, you know, throw R&B at us either. Find a way that works and actually speaks to us as human beings versus just that. I mean, there's so many other ways. There's so many other like marketing methods out there.
Right.
Versus almost like throwing a stereotype at us and being like, yes, stereotype. Now go. We did this for the Black people. Now go buy our burgers.
Right.
You were represented.
Yeah. And you said you also have found kind of within your niche other Black voices that are into food in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me about that.
So I find that, you know, Black people are pretty much everywhere. And we love a myriad of things, and food is one of them. I have met a ton of really amazing food people in New York, and they love anything from restaurants, cooking at home, and recipe development. And I think that's awesome. It started to make me think, like, you know, the Martha Stewarts of the world are absolutely amazing, but that may not be speaking to us as a culture. Like, it's not necessarily a cultural reference for us. I mean, I think she did make herself more relevant because she partnered with Snoop Dogg. And so it should definitely, like, what a twist there, but it made it feel more, that was more connected.
I noticed that you kind of weave in talking about representation, or I guess like a Black point of view. Like you had the one where you talked about meat being like well done and that being this thing that others, you know, assume that, okay, if you're Black, you want your meat well done, you know, and so you keep kind of hitting the point of like, that's not everybody, you know. It's like your feed gives people information and at the same time makes them want to go eat, you know.
I don't want to beat a dead horse with that, because I think that sometimes just getting hit with like, Black people need to be represented, you need to be able to speak to or hear Black voices and then do something with that information. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I definitely will speak about it on occasion. Yeah. I mean, I think there are some blind spots out there, and turning your nose up or not listening to those voices doesn't help anyone. It's not helping. I mean, specifically with the whole movement that we saw during the summertime, where George Floyd was such a big deal, we saw a lot of companies saying we're listening and we're just being very aware, and the Black squares were posted, and you know, for like the next 20 squares of their content, they posted Black people or posted about things, resources that you could use to be able to get an understanding on Black people. And then as we've gotten away from that, you see them slowly starting to go back to their prominent feed, some, not all, and or they haven't changed what they're doing behind the scenes. Like, I think it starts with being able to get a more diverse group of folks in the C-suite. I mean, I've been in specific companies where I felt very uncomfortable speaking out, even though I was helping diversity numbers.
Right.
And diversity is great, but diversity is only great when everyone has an equal voice. And it's not like, thanks. And moving on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think your feed also shows different types of food, so that I know, like, sometimes in Los Angeles, I might go with my sister somewhere and we're going to go, maybe it's Asian food, and they're like, do you guys need a fork? And she gets really upset. She's like, I can do chopsticks, you know? So I think it you show variety, you know, and kind of, and you're teaching your followers different things about food. Your content's really, like, kind of, it's gorgeous, and it's like food photography, you know, really vivid and rich. So how do you decide what you're going to kind of create, or when you're going to take a picture? Like, how do you kind of determine what you want to capture?
Having a very contrasty approach, and then definitely having a lot of light. It's actually very difficult to shoot in a restaurant most times, because they're trying to create this, like, very moody ambiance, and that means dark. And that is, like, the mortal enemy of any photographer. If you don't have light, then it's almost impossible to make a good, to make food look beautiful.
Yeah.
Food likes directional light. So that means it can't just be like a fluorescent light above it, because one fluorescent casts this very not flattering tone on anything, really, but food specifically. And then it's coming from, like, right down. And so I don't know if you're, so if you take a picture of a person and you only have light going above it, then you're going to get all these really deep shadows underneath it. But imagine food doesn't have anything really underneath it other than a plate. So you're just getting this very bright color with no depth or definition at all. And so I think sometimes it's difficult. So I definitely look for lighting as well. Beautiful lighting, amazing, beautiful big windows. Oh, if somebody has an outdoor space, that is gold. You can go during time and get amazing images. But then also I started to really dig deeper into doing things at home. I think COVID made me have to. And so getting a setup with lighting so that, like, if it's dreary outside, like right now it is raining cats and dogs over here. Oh. And so it wouldn't be great to take a picture and only have, like, really dark backgrounds, like very overcast and basically dark. And so I started to invest in lighting, and I feel like with that, you can make any image pretty beautiful because you can kind of simulate sunlight. So as long as there's, like, rich color, that's great. But if it doesn't have color, then I try to look for interesting textures, because say, for instance, something is very brown, and how do you make brown interesting? Mm-hmm. You have to, I guess, add texture or other levels to it. So, like, if it's pasta, hopefully there's pepper, because now there's that, and then maybe cheese adds a little bit of texture too. So I guess that's my focus. If I can't make it super vibrant, I can make it interesting.
Right. Yeah, you can tell. It's just, it's a beautiful feed. It always makes me want to eat something.
That helps out. Yeah.
So let's talk about, like, what would be, you consider, like, the first recipe that you did that for sure got you hooked on cooking?
Ooh, I can almost say this with the utmost confidence. It was a chocolate cake that I made with my mom with chocolate icing. And I have always wanted to help my mom, even before I could reach the counter. And I know, so my mom, like, ended up buying me a step stool so I could reach the counter. And I remember just, like, having this light in my eyes whenever we made this chocolate cake. It was like a Mexican chocolate cake. It was like spiced, so it has a little bit of cayenne, like chocolate with any type of spice. Just, oh, it's amazing. And that's what we made. And wow, it was just I remember from that point on, I was like, food is my thing. I love food, and this is a good deal. I mean, and it was just every aspect of it. I think it was the aspect of making it. It was even the waiting. That's the hardest part, I think, with cakes, mm-hmm. having to wait and figure that part out. But my mom and I used to play this game. She was like, you know, if you get loud, the cake will drop. You don't want it to be sunken in the middle, so you can't do that. But yeah, it was, I think, a chocolate cake changed my life and made me a complete foodie for now and forever.
I love it.
Well, from then till now. Yeah, forever. Yeah.
I noticed that you not only talk about cooking, but you have like restaurant reviews. So if someone was to be like, someone's going to visit New York and they can only go to one spot, where would you recommend they go?
Ooh, that is the hardest question I have ever had in my life. That is such a hard one. Oh my gosh. You were the tough question. Geez. You, like, when people ask me where they should go eat, I like get stumped because I feel like I have to ask all these precursor questions beforehand, because it's like, do you have any allergies and where are you staying in New York? You know what? I really like this restaurant called The Wilson. I like that there's a female chef. Not going to sit here and say that's not a factor. Mm-hmm. But I also love it because there is a variety of food. So there's vegan. She's very in tune with making sure that she has vegan options. And there's this Brussels sprout taco there that I don't care if you have only wanted meat in your whole life, you're going to love that Brussels sprout taco. It's so good. She's very detailed down to like what the taco shell is made out of. It's made out of this Middle Eastern bread, like dough. And she like cups it into this shell. So it adds this beautiful level of like airiness and aromatic flavor that you get just in that. But then of course there's toppings. So not only does she have the Brussels sprout that was like sauteed and there's slight charred pieces, very crunchy. She has this sauce on. Oh, if you ever go, it's so good. But then there's obviously other stuff too. So like she has pescatarian options that she's put on the menu. And then she's also done, if you're a meatitarian, sorry, how I say it. If you love meat and you just have to have meat with every meal, there's steak. And then there's other like options there. So I think that restaurant is like a good mix. Plus it's very beautiful. It's actually connected to a hotel. So if it's like your first time coming to New York, you won't be in a place where you're feeling like, oh gosh, like, is this shady? Am I going to get robbed? Like, because I understand that is some focus when people come here, because you just don't know New York. You're not really sure. But I think that's a great place to go because it's public, but it's also not too public. It's kind of in Chelsea, it's on 28th Street. So it's not super touristy, but it's enough. So you can kind of, if you wanted to walk to like Penn Station or Times Square, you're not too far.
Okay. You have also talked about your love of fitness. That's in your feed too. So how do you kind of weave in that content? And how did you decide to add that to the mix?
I feel like it's like never ending. but I will say that a whole reason I even started talking about fitness is because somebody was like, hey, you eat and you post so much food, but like, it doesn't look like you get any bigger. And I was like, well, there is some things to that. And working out is a big part of it. So especially before the pandemic, I was extremely active, having to commute and take the subway, and all of that stuff was a part of just keeping active and moving. And then I believe when COVID hit, it started to make me more aware of how much I guess I took that commute for granted and started to have to be very intentional with moving. And then I also understand, just from living in another state that's maybe not so commuter centered, that not everybody is going to be moving in that way. Not everyone's going to be walking 6 or 7 blocks to be able to get to where they're going. And so, you know, how do I also support those folks within my community? And so I started talking more about some of the stuff I started doing at home. Like, I have a Peloton now, and I absolutely love that thing. Mm-hmm. It is so great. It starts getting me moving in a way that I just really didn't think that I would enjoy. Spin always made my bottom hurt. And so I was like, I don't know if I love this, but now I'm completely hooked. That's completely went away. And then I had a lot of struggles when I initially started my fitness routine, because I started to get DOMS, delayed onset muscle soreness. And I would be super sore for like a week and a half from like one workout. And so my recovery time would take a week and a half. And so within a month's time, I'm only working out like 4 times. That's not great, if that. And so I started to have to really think through what I need to do. So I started talking about supplementation and the things that I take, just to make sure that I can get through my recovery. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely wanted to start focusing more on that. And that's what I've been doing. And it's been awesome. A lot of folks feel very motivated by it. And so if I'm able to help motivate you, and they come in my comments and within my DMs and motivate me too, it's been great. I feel like that's an awesome community in itself as well.
Right. Last question. Where can everyone find you?
So Foodie with a Fro, I'm pretty much that name on every social media platform. So I'm definitely on Pinterest. I'm on TikTok. I'm on Facebook. I'm also on Instagram, and YouTube is a new one for me. I just started YouTube, doing a little bit longer form, which has been really fun. I love video, and so being able to dive into that world has been awesome. And then my website, thefoodiewithafro.com, is being revamped now, but you can find me there too.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your foodie journey.
Thank you for having me. This has been great. It feels like a very natural conversation. I'm glad that you set this up. This was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Like what you're hearing? Go ahead and subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. You can also share the podcast on Instagram and tag me at @LiveByViv. As far as my music, it's The Croft by Joachim Karud. And everything we talked about in this episode can be found in the show notes on livebyviv.com. Okay, and remember, don't mix in because you don't need to.